What's up, guys? All right, here's a question. Who, we got a few of the SALT staff, Veritas staff, who are rolling out to California, driving there. Is anyone driving further than that for spring break? Tough. Okay. Guys, this is, some of you don't have plans yet. You can drive to Alaska and back, okay, in that week. Okay? You have to drive literally the whole time. You get like a touch and go. It's like touch Alaska, come back. Okay? But you can do it, and you would have some huge points in my department. That'd be pretty cool. We're continuing through this study of 1 Corinthians, and we're in 1 Corinthians 8. I don't have any segue from that. I just wanted to know, actually, who was going furthest. 1 Corinthians 8, if you guys got a Bible, pull it out. I'm just going to start by kind of reading the beginning of this passage. We don't have any points, anything tonight. The text really just kind of flows. One idea that he's kind of working through in these two chapters we're going to work through tonight. But this is how he starts this section. He's kind of continuing to do this thing where they've written him a letter, and they have some questions. They have some issues going on in their church, and Paul's been basically responding to them and saying, hey, this is how you deal with sexual immorality. This is how you think about boasting. This is how you think about these issues. This is how you think about singleness, marriage, all the things we've been talking about. And he's about to talk about food that's been sacrificed to idols. Now, this is what he says in chapter 8. Now, concerning food offered to idols, we know that all of us possess knowledge. This knowledge, it puffs up, but love builds up. If anyone imagines that he knows something, he does not yet know as he ought to know. But if anyone loves God, he is known by God. Therefore, as to the eating of food offered to idols, we know that an idol has no real existence, and that there is no God but one. For although there are many so-called gods in heaven or on earth, as indeed there are many gods and many lords, yet for us there is one God, the Father, from whom are all things and for whom we exist, and one Lord, Jesus Christ, through whom are all things and through whom we exist. Okay? So he brings up this issue, food sacrificed to idols. And this is kind of weird for us, right? We don't have this going on today so much in Iowa City. We were actually talking about this as staff, as not this text, because if you guys do concessions, we sell like a ton of food, right? And you can make this argument that Kinnick is like the biggest temple in Iowa City, and so we may all have actually eaten food sacrificed to idols. But it's different in this day, okay? Literal temples kind of strewn throughout the city, and basically what these temples would do is they'd basically be a temple to like a god, like some local deity, some kind of pagan false god that people would, basically they would take animals to, and they would begin to cut up this animal, and basically they would sacrifice the animal, and they would sacrifice the meat to this god in this temple. And basically what they would do is some of the meat they'd burn, some of the meat they'd kind of set aside kind of for this god to like consume or kind of as like the sacrifice portion. But part of it you'd save, and you'd take this meat, you'd cook it, you'd eat it there in the temple, or you'd like kind of bring it to market. And this meat was like meat sacrificed to idols. So it was like, hey, this meat, it's like normal meat, it's like a normal steak, but it gets you like points with this god. And so it's kind of involved in this religious experience of the day. And that's kind of what's going on. And these temples are everywhere, and so almost all the meat in the city, it was hard to know. Is this meat that's been like kind of involved in this kind of temple cult ritual, or is this just a normal steak? Like it's hard to know kind of which one is which. And for many of the people of the city, many of the people who are in Corinth, the new Christians are in Corinth, eating meat that was sacrificed to idols was like one of the main ways that they actually kind of worshiped the false gods, like indulged in idolatry before they became a Christian. And so this would be like a normal part of their life growing up. And so now that these people have been saved and they now worship Christ, the question is, okay, what do we do with all of this meat that's in the city? Like a lot of the meat's been sacrificed to idols. What do we do? And there's kind of two groups of people. One group of people is kind of the first group here we're talking about. And these group of people, they're the people that have knowledge. And basically what these group of people are doing is they're basically saying, hey, here's what's true, right? We know that God is one. There's only one real God, right? He's the creator. And we know that kind of the statues there, they're not like real. They're not real gods. Like it's not like a real thing that's going on. We understand that this meat is just meat. And even though it was kind of sacrificed to this god, someone else did that. And actually, you can eat this meat, and just because you eat the steak doesn't mean like you're defiled by it because of what someone else did with the animal. And so basically he's saying we have this knowledge, we have this kind of this theology going on that we understand that worshiping the false god and eating the meat are two different things. And so we can actually eat this meat without worshiping the false god. We're literally just eating a good steak. And God doesn't care if we eat steaks, right? This is their logic. And Paul, as he starts to kind of address this issue, he starts by agreeing with them. He says, actually, that's totally true. Like, that way of thinking is right, it makes sense, it's sound. You eating this meat doesn't defile you, right? You can eat this meat without worshiping this idol. That's true. You're not contaminated by it. So he says, you are right in everything you are saying, but you're actually wrong in what you're doing. You're right in what you're thinking, but you're wrong in what you're actually doing. The reason he gives is interesting. He says that these people are living their life based on a knowledge of what they can do or can't do. So they're living a life based on knowledge. And he is saying that they actually should be living a life based on love for those people around them. He's saying this knowledge, it puffs up, but love, it builds up. And so why does he make this distinction? I think it's an interesting distinction, knowledge versus love. Well, the reason he does that is because while these people, this one group of kind of knowledgeable people, they have this knowledge, not everyone does. And this is how he continues in verse 7. He says, however, not all possess this knowledge, but some, through former association with idols, they eat food as really offered to an idol, and their conscience, being weak, is defiled. Food will not commend us to God. We're not worse off if we do not eat, and we're not better off if we do, but take care that this right of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. For if anyone sees you who have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will he not be encouraged if his conscience is weak to eat food offered to idols? And so by your knowledge, this weak person is destroyed, your brother for whom Christ died. Thus, sinning against your brothers and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never eat meat lest I make my brother stumble. This is what's happening. Some of the people who are in the church, they are eating meat sacrificed to idols, right? They're doing that. And because of their theology, because of their knowledge, like they aren't being defiled. It's not a conscience issue for them. Like they understand that they can do this, eat this meat, and for them, it's totally separated from the idolatry that the meat is normally associated with. And so their conscience is clean. They're actually not doing something that is on its face sinful. But there's this other group of people in the church, and they don't have this knowledge. Paul calls them weak. They're weak. Now, we have to kind of stop here for a second because it's really important we understand that these people, they're not legalists, okay? Them kind of having this rule, like this rule for themselves, this feeling, this emotion, I shouldn't do this. I shouldn't eat this meat. That's not them being self-righteous. It's not them trying to bring kind of this Old Testament law to the New Testament and say, hey, we need to follow all the Old Testament laws about what meat we're allowed to eat and different things. No, that's not what's going on. Paul talks super differently to those kind of people. You can read the way Paul responds to them in Galatians. He's not responding to them as though they're legalists. He says they are weak. Their past life and their past sin, it's put them in a position of like weakness. Like their conscience is weak in this area. It's not strong. And this meat, right? It's not just meat for them. It's not just a steak. No, it was like part of their past. It reminds them of their old sinful life, and they can't just eat it like other people can. No, when they eat it, they feel like they are entering back into their old life of sin and idolatry. It's like they are once again worshiping the God of the temple, and eating the meat for them is as though they are going back to live like the world once again. But because these weak brothers and sisters, they see these strong, knowledgeable brothers and sisters eating this meat in the temple and in their home, they start to do it too. But because their conscience is weak, they become defiled. And it apparently, some of these people, like, that idolatry that they entered back into, it actually, like, sucked them away from the church. Like, they entered back into that, and it was like they even though they knew, they felt like they weren't supposed to do it because they saw other people doing it, they entered into it. And because of that, they hardened their heart, and actually, it says they were destroyed. It's just, like, really strong word in the Greek. And here's the big problem. The thing that Paul's getting at is, though, even though this is happening, these strong people who have this knowledge, they don't really care. They don't really care. They're not actually concerned about their brother or their sister. They're not really concerned about their brother or sister's heart or their salvation or their conscience. No, instead, they are more concerned about their own freedom. They're more concerned about their own rights. They're ultimately concerned about their rightness. It's okay for us to do that. Therefore, we will. And I want you to look closely at the way Paul describes what is happening as a result of this choice that they're making. In verse 11, he says, "And so, by your knowledge, this weak person is destroyed, the brother for whom Christ died. Thus, sinning against your brothers and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never eat meat, lest I make my brother stumble." Like, I hope you hear his words when he's writing this. Like, I hope you can feel his heart in this, because he's, like, looking at people who are making this choice, and it's kind of this unthinking, kind of this callous response by these knowledgeable people. And it's like Paul is saying, like, do you understand what you're doing? Like, you are destroying the weak brother or sister who is around you. And it's like, and maybe you don't get it. Like, this is the one that Christ died for. It's like his heart is just put on display. He's like, guys, do you see, like, the pain that this is causing? Do you see what's really going on by your actions? And this is a question we have to wrestle with, because when we're looking at this text, the question is this: is our main question when we are approaching choices in our life or actions we're going to take, is our main question, do I have the freedom to do this? Or is our main question, will this help and benefit the people Jesus loves around me? They're two very different questions, right? One is this within my rights? Am I free to do this? Or is this going to be the best possible thing for the people Jesus loves in my life and in the world? These people, they were choosing their freedom, and they were doing what their conscience gave them freedom to do, but they were only thinking about themselves. They weren't considering or thinking at all about how their choices affected those around them. And Paul says that by doing this, they ended up destroying the weak people around them. They ended up destroying the brother for whom Christ died. Now, I want you to notice what Paul is doing, because Paul's not giving them a command, right? He isn't saying, you feel this freedom, but you're wrong. Actually, you're never supposed to eat meat sacrificed to idols. This is like a command. That's not what he does. No, wait, he doesn't give them a command. He gives them a new way of thinking. He's trying to change the way they think. He doesn't say, don't ever eat meat if it has been sacrificed to idols. He says, take care that this right of yours doesn't become a stumbling block to your brother or sister. Don't make your decisions based on what you can or can't do. Actually, change your way of thinking. Make your decisions based on what will be best. Love and serve the people around you. Use your decisions to answer that kind of question. Now, here's where I want to take this. Food sacrifice to idols. I want to take it to today's world, right? Because that's abstract. That's out there. What does this look like today? This idea of making decisions based not on what I'm free to do or what within my rights as a Christian, as a gospel-believing Christian, but what is actually the best way to love and protect the people around me. We take that in today's world. What's the most immediate, obvious parallel? It's not food at Kinnick Stadium, okay? It's going to the bars. That is the most clear, most immediate parallel from this text. It's going to the bars. Now, the question we normally ask is this, right? Is it wrong for me to go to the bars? Go to the bars, maybe have a drink, okay? Now, there's one way that's, like, really easy to answer this question, right? Like, sometimes it's a really easy answer. Like, if you're going to the bars, to find people to hook up with. Yes, it's wrong. The Bible says that really clearly. It says flee from sexual immorality. Okay, so no, yes, that's wrong. But what about going to the bars to drink too much alcohol and to get drunk? Yes, very clear from Scripture. That is wrong. Going to the bars, or like you're going to some party like to drink underage. Like some of you are doing that, and it's just blatantly sinful. It's wrong. The Bible would absolutely condemn that. We're going because the party scene, like that's where we gain social status. And so maybe it's not drinking, but you're using that kind of for this idol of like your social status. It would say, yes, that's wrong. So if you're a Christian and you're going to the bars, right, and what you're doing is literally you're coming to like bow down and worship at the altar of like the idol of sex or the idol of social status or the idol of alcohol, then yeah, like that's very clearly wrong. That's like someone going into the temple of the idol and literally just like bowing before the statue, right? It's like, yes, that's clearly not what you're supposed to be doing. Jesus didn't die for you so that you could continue to live that kind of life. He actually died for you to free you from slavery to idolatry so you could walk away from that towards true actual freedom. So some of you, it's clear. It's like, that's why it's wrong for you to go to the bars. But what about just going to the bars or going to those kind of parties, period? Right? Some of you in the room, like, you're like, we're not getting drunk. We aren't here to hook up with people. Like, and you know, you're not there. You're not, like, struggling with lust. Like, sometimes that's a real issue. You go downtown. You go to the bars. Like, the things people are wearing, some of you, you actually struggle, and you shouldn't go because of that. But let's just say that's not happening. The way people are dressed, it's not a problem for you. And, you know, you're not there to worship some cultural idol with everyone else. That's not why you're there. Like, you just want a steak, right? You're that guy. Just here for the meat, okay? Like, I just want a beer. Like, a beer. Not six, not seven, one beer. I just want to have some fun with my friends. I don't want to do anything too stupid. I just want to go out. I want to have fun. And, you know, because there's energy there. It's what everyone else does. It's fun. I don't want to do anything that's blatantly sinful. Well, are you free to do that as a Christian? Is it within your rights to do that? Yes, absolutely it is. But Paul says that's the wrong question. That's not the question you should be asking. Paul says the question isn't just, am I free to do this? The question is, could this right of mine end up being a stumbling block for a brother or sister? Like that image, like a stumbling block, like that's kind of become like Christianese, right? We're like, we use that like to talk about sin or like I stumbled, right? Which is like a really abstract way, but it's literally like you're walking along like a path and all of a sudden like there is a boulder in your way and like you smash your body into it and like crash and burn. Like that's what you're talking about, a stumbling block. Like it's not something you can just kind of, you know, I can just kind of walk around this. It's like, no, it's this like intrusion into your life that you trip over and wreck your body on. So that's the question. Could that be something that puts a stumbling block in someone else's life? Well, the answer in Iowa City is yes. Like without question, absolutely it could. And not just it could, it does. And not just it does, but like there's people who were part of Salt Company who like that's their story. Like they came in, they were trying to figure out how to follow Jesus. And their walk with Christ, their Christianity, whatever you want to call it, it was destroyed because of some of the foolish decisions and lack of judgment of people in this room. That happens, like, often. You have these kinds of questions, and here's what I'm not trying to do. I'm not trying to be condemning at all. I'm just trying to be really honest with you guys that some of the choices you make have real honest consequences. You know, here's a super normal question that you should actually be asking. It's normal to ask this, right? You're turning 21, okay? All of a sudden, you're like, I've been underage for a super long time. I haven't drank because I'm not supposed to, and David told me on stage, don't drink underage, so I didn't. And you're like, but now I'm 21, okay? And so what do you do? Here's a question. Like, do you go to a place like Brothers or Union and, like, have your 21st birthday party? Like, do you do that? Well, what's the question? There isn't a specific law about this. It's a new way of thinking, right? It's not knowledge. Is it right or wrong to do this? It's love. Is this the most loving thing I can do? Could this be a stumbling block for somebody? Well, let's put some scenarios out there. What about one of the people you're with who used to have a problem with alcohol? What if one of the people you're with used to struggle with drinking? And not just struggle with drinking, but like this bar, this place, like this is part of their old life. And now you're having this party that's it's kind of fun and you're trying to kind of be good Christians about it, but like you're in this place that like brings up a lot of kind of pain and actually the old way of them living. And they remember that old way of life. And they're like, this is really hard for me. It hurts super bad. And I'm actually watching you kind of laugh and have a good time, kind of entering into this. Like you have one foot in this world, but you're not fully there. And I'm like really confused about this. Do you think it could be a stumbling block for that weaker brother or sister? What about the person who was a freshman, right? And they had their fake ID at the same bar every weekend. What about them? Do you think it could be a stumbling block? What about the people that see your Snapchat story or like they see your photos from Instagram like the next Monday or Sunday, like after kind of this event, right? Here's one thing that's true, guys. Photos of Christians at Brother's Bar with a bunch of beers and shots looks exactly the same as everyone else's Instagram post from that weekend. It doesn't look any different. Now you might say, but we weren't getting trashed. I'm just saying, like, what does it look like? Could it be a stumbling block for someone that you know? Could it be someone like someone in your connection group, right? What if you're there and the person you've been witnessing to in your class, they show up and they're there too? And you're like, oh, this is awesome. This is the person who's been inviting me to Salt Company. And like, you're here, bro. Like, this is sweet. Or like the person in your connection group, they're not a Christian yet, and they struggle with drinking. And you're at the same bar they're at, and they're looking at you, and they're like, I think this person might have also had a little bit too much to drink. Paul is saying, be careful. Be really careful. Be on guard that you don't use your freedom in a manner that might cause someone else to stumble. What about the kind of TV and movies we watch? I was talking with Mark, and he kind of brought this up, and I started thinking about it, and I was like, this is actually so true. This is so true. It's not something I think about a lot, but this is one of those issues, I think, for us. Like, you have a show that you really want to watch. You really want to watch it, and you know what? Yep, it's got some nudity in it. Yep, it's got a lot of sexual scenes, and maybe you're the kind of person that's not affected by that all that much, right? I don't tend to, like, lust that much when I see that, or kind of look away, whatever, and you go, it's not a big deal for me. So you watch this and you kind of endorse it and you tell people about it and you talk about how great it is and you actually get some of your friends together to watch it together. Well, what about the weaker brother who actually really struggles with sexual purity? And those scenes that you see on the screen, you're able to kind of like, you're strong enough to kind of not have a problem with that, but later that night, like those are the scenes that are running through their mind. Do you think that could be a stumbling block for them? What about the person who just loves watching The Bachelor, right? Yeah, I went there. I'm going there. The Bachelor, right? I mean, I get it, okay? I get it. Like, you girls in the room, like, I don't think there's, like, maybe a couple guys watch The Bachelor, but, like, you girls, okay? I'm going after you. No, like, you watch it because it's funny, right? I get it. You're like, it's kind of funny. You know, like, we're not, like, really watching this for the same reason that other people watch this. We're watching because it's funny. And here's what I want you guys to ask the question. What about the weaker sister in the room, right? The weaker sister who's in the room with you, or weaker brother, maybe bros are watching this, I don't know, whatever. You're in the room, and actually, like, this person struggles, like, they go to bed at night, and, like, they feel this, like, desperate loneliness inside them. Like, they feel desperately lonely all the time, and you're presenting the show to them that doesn't actually destroy their idol of affection and feel like they need a relationship to be whole, but actually it feeds that and it molds them to be this person that thinks that if I just have someone else, then I'll finally be happy and whole and fulfilled. The question is, do you think that might be a stumbling block for someone? I think it probably could. You know, here's another one I want to talk about. What about the photos that you post of yourself on social media? The photos you post about yourself on social media. And I want to really specifically talk about the ones where you're at a beach or you're at a pool and you're in a bikini, okay? Bikini or two-piece, some kind of like revealing swimsuit. Once again, mostly talking to the girls here. If you're a guy, that's a totally different sermon where we talk about that. But here's the question. Are you free to do that? Is that within your rights as a Christian? to wear that kind of bathing suit, take a photo, put it online. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to fight that fight. Like, that's not what Paul's getting at. His question isn't, is that right or wrong? Is that modesty, immodesty? That's not his question. His question is, do you think that you posting a picture of you in a fairly revealing swimsuit might cause a brother or sister to stumble? Right? Like, what about the weaker brother in the room who's actually really trying, like they're trying so hard to stop objectifying women in their mind? Like, they've been raised their whole life, and culture has just slammed this sexualized view of women down their throat day after day after day, and they're trying to guard their eyes, they're trying to guard their heart from lust. And then on an Instagram feed, all of a sudden, your photo pops up, and you're in a bikini, and you look good. Like, do you think that could be a stumbling block for them? Or, right, it's not just guys. Like, what about the girl that's in your connection group? And, like, she struggles with posting photos really similar to the one you posted, not because she's just kind of having fun and she's kind of unthinking about it, but no, she posts that because she's trying to get likes and she's trying to get affection from guys. And she feels like if she puts herself out there in this kind of way, maybe she'll get the affection that she wants. And seeing your photo that looks so much like hers kind of communicates to her that this is actually okay to do. And my connection group leaders just like me in this area. And it doesn't help them become more like Jesus. It actually is like a stumbling block in their salvation and their walk towards Christ. What about the girl in your connection group who struggles with like her body image, right? And she views like, I mean, just women are kind of undressed. There's this perfect body presented for them everywhere, and they struggle with that. They're really insecure. Like, is your photo of yourself on your wall, is it helpful for them, or is it a stumbling block? Like, does it cause them to condemn themselves even further? The issue isn't whether you are right or wrong to post the picture. The issue is whether it is the most loving way you can protect and help the weaker brothers and sisters around you. Paul's saying that's what's important. That's what is important. And he says, take care that your freedom doesn't cause a brother or sister to stumble. Take care that your knowledge doesn't end up destroying the person for whom Christ died. Now, here's what's been going on in my heart all week. As I'm reading this text, I'm thinking about it, I'm hearing Paul call me to give up my freedom and give up my rights in order to serve the people around me. And I'll just be honest, there's a pushback that goes on in my heart when I hear this. Because I think about this and I'm like, okay, this kind of seems like a completely ridiculous way to live. Not just ridiculous, but like exhausting, right? Like this idea that you shape your life and you change your life based on the people around you, that you limit your freedom, you kind of limit your life, what you're allowed to do in your life based on like the people around you, not just the people, like the weak people around you who can't handle it. If you actually did this, and if you're really thoughtful about the things you did and the choices you make, it seems like if you considered the weaker person, always, you always thought about it. You were really intentional to do that. And you chose to love them well rather than embrace your freedom. It seems as though you would stop being a free person and you would kind of end up being a slave. Like you wouldn't have your freedom anymore. No, you'd kind of all of a sudden became a slave to all the people around you. You would be their servant, not your own kind of autonomous person anymore. That's what I feel. Because I'm thinking about the ramifications of this. The ramifications of this text are actually huge for all of us, I think. It's not just like the few categories I listed out. Like I think all of us have areas where it's like, are we actually considering our brother before our own freedom? That has massive ramifications. And if you play it out, I think you get to the end and you go, I don't know if my life would be about me anymore. I think I'd be like a servant to all the rest of the people in my life. And I put that to Paul, and I say, Paul, that's what I feel. And he responds in the text, says, yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. You get it. That's what it's about. It's actually about being a servant of everyone else in your life. It's actually about denying your freedom and your autonomy and your rights in order to give service to the people around you, right? He says, if food makes my brother stumble, that's a bummer for them. What does he say? Then I will never eat meat. Done. I won't eat meat. If that's the issue, that's the stumbling block for my brother, I won't eat meat. That's a big deal, okay? Because meat's good. It's very delicious, okay? I don't mean to offend you if you're vegan. Really, I'm not trying to do that. I personally enjoy meat, okay? He's saying, if meat makes my brother stumble, then I'm never going to eat meat, okay? Get into chapter 9, and he begins to kind of flesh this out. He gets into this, and he goes, guys, here's what I'm talking about. Money. He gets into money, and he goes, you know what's true? All the other apostles, like, you know what's totally within my rights as an apostle? To come to the Corinthian church and to say, hey, guys, I need to live with you. You need to kind of pay for my meals. You need to support me because I'm your pastor. He's like, that's biblical. That makes sense. That's within my freedom, within my rights. I don't do that. He's like, remember me when I was in Corinth? What was I doing? Yep, preaching the gospel, doing a ton of discipleship, doing a ton of pastor things, and making tents. So Paul does. Not cool, like I work for Patagonia, like I make canvas tents in my backyard and like try to peddle them on the streets of Corinth, right? Like that's what he did. And you're like, Paul, you didn't need to do that. He's like, you're right, I didn't need to. Why did I do it? This is what he says, 9:12. Nevertheless, we have not made use of this right. We could have, we didn't, why? But we endure anything rather than put an obstacle in the way of the gospel of Christ. He's like, I would endure anything, whatever it is. No meat, great. I got to have my own job, great. Why? I don't want to put an obstacle in front of anyone's path from them to the gospel of Jesus. I want to make it the smoothest path possible with no obstacles, no stumbling blocks. And he continues like this in 9:19 because he says, for though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all that I might win more of them. To the Jews, I became a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law. Why? That I might win those who are under the law. To those outside of the law, I became as one outside of the law. And he kind of qualifies this, right? Not being outside of the law of God, but under the law of Christ. Right? Why does he do this? He does it so that he might win those who are outside the law. To the weak, I became weak. Why? So that he might win the weak. He says, I have become all things to all people that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel that I may share with them in its blessings. He says, though I am free, this is true, the gospel gives you radical, radical freedom. And he says, though I am free, I have made myself a slave. Do you live your life like this? Like, is that the way you live your life? Is you say, though I am free, I have made myself a slave to those people around you, right? Completely free in the gospel, yet radical service to the salvation and goodness to those around you, right? Paul, he has this crazy thing where he doesn't view his freedom and view his rights as something that he needs to hold on to, this kind of iron grip. No, he views it as something that he can give away at each and every turn. And I don't think a lot of us think like this. I don't think a lot of you think this way because I know that in a lot of areas of my life and for a lot of times in my life, I haven't thought this way, right? I've looked at what am I free to do? What's within my rights? And I don't really think so much about the way it looks or I haven't considered how it might come across or I haven't considered its effect on the hearts and minds of those around me. And if I'm honest, I haven't wanted to. Like, I don't want to know that. I don't care. I want my freedom. I don't want my life to be limited because of someone else's weakness. I don't want my choices based on what someone else might think about them or perceive about them, right? I don't want to have to think about that. I just want to think about myself and then live my life. But then Paul tells me this. He says, I hear you, David. I hear that heart that you have, but this is why I do it. I do it so that I might win more of them. I do it so that by all means I might save some. I do it for the sake of the gospel so that I might actually take more people and join them in with me that we could share together in its blessings. And I think this is what's true. I think when you look at Paul's life from a distance, you go, this is crazy. Everything about this guy's life doesn't make sense. But I'm telling you, as soon as you look at it closer, it completely makes sense. It totally makes sense. Even though Paul was making himself a servant of all, Paul wasn't actually giving up anything. He wasn't giving up anything. Here's what I mean. If you come to me and you say, David, you have a red car. It's a Mazda RX-8. I like my car. Okay? You come to me. You say, hey, you need to give up your car. Give it up. I'll say, really don't want to. Okay? I really like my car. I enjoy it. My favorite car I've ever owned. I don't want to give it up. You come to me again. You say, David, give up your car. Stop driving it. You can't have it. Don't have your car. I will push back against that. I like my car. I don't want to give it up. I don't want a different car. I like this car. Don't make me do that. And you go, you need to give it up. It's not going to fit. And you're like, what are you talking about? It's not going to fit. They're like, it's not going to fit in your garage. I'm like, it fits perfectly in my garage. What are you talking about? And you're like, oh, shoot, I forgot to tell you. The reason you need to give up your car is because we're giving you a brand new Porsche. Porsche 911R, okay? V6, straight six, not V, straight six, 9,000 RPM red line, guys. Actual six-speed, not like kind of that, you know, paddle shifter and stuff. It's a beautiful car. They're like, that's why. It's why you have to get rid of the Mazda. It's because we bought you this Porsche, and actually this is what's going to go in your garage now. Do you know how much that changes the conversation, right? It's like, I don't like the Mazda anymore. I'm done with it. It's easy. Take the Mazda. Keep the gum that's in the dash. Like, you can have all of it, right? Like, everything changes in that moment when all of a sudden you realize, like, I'm not asked to just be to give up something I love and like. I'm actually asked to give this up, to trade it for something that's so much better. I'm telling you, that is Paul's life each and every single day. He is giving up his freedom. He is giving up his rights, but he is doing this. By doing this, he is gaining so much more. He says that by all possible means, I might win human beings to heaven. That's what I'm about. The reason Paul wasn't concerned about his individual freedom and rights, and it seems like he's just so callous about things that we really care about and kind of hold on to, is because Paul has such a bigger vision for what his life is about than we often do, right? He really believed. He genuinely believed with everything in his heart, and some of you need to believe this more, that the God who he loves, the God who knows him, actually has created a way where his life, his choices, his actions, his life can actually make an eternal difference in the lives of other people around him. He actually believed that. That he didn't just have kind of the ability through Christ to actually affect change in the world and kind of, you know, through the grace of Jesus Christ, through the Spirit of God, to actually cause like something to happen in the world. He didn't just believe that. He said that, no, I can actually do things that are going to reverberate through the entire history of time. If not eating meat means that my brother or sister won't stumble, but will share in the blessings of God, then I will never eat meat. If not eating meat means that somehow I can more clearly present and represent the gospel of Jesus Christ to those in my life, then I will never eat meat again. Do you see what he's saying? He's like, who cares about a few moments of not eating meat when very soon I will dine at the wedding feast of the Lamb of God? He's saying, who cares about foregoing drinking for a few seasons and in some situations in life when the king who's coming back for us, he turns water into wine. I don't think that Paul felt like he was actually giving anything up. I don't think he felt like he was giving anything up at all. I think he thought hard about the reality of heaven and hell and eternity, and he looked at these small, momentary freedoms and momentary rights that he had on earth. And then he looked at forever, eternal image bearers of God. It wasn't a hard choice to make. It's not hard to make. Do I serve my freedom and my rights that are here for a moment and gone because this life lasts for a breath? Or do I live my life in service so that at the end of time, when we meet King Jesus, we don't come and say, I retained all my freedom and all my rights. We come and we say, Jesus, I lived this life for the things you love. And you love people. And you died for people. You're about people. And yes, you gave me freedom, and yes, you gave me incredible standing and rights in the kingdom of God, and I gladly sacrificed some of that so that I could grab this person and this person and this person and this person, and I could grab them together with me and say, let's follow Jesus together. Are you weak? Okay, I'll become weak. Are you weak in this way? I'll give up that. It's worth it to follow Jesus. And it's also worth it because God isn't asking us to do something he hasn't already done. The only reason you have any freedom, the only reason you have any rights at all to even give up in the first place is because Jesus gave all of those up for you already. Like the King of the universe who stretches out his arms and they reach past the ends of the cosmos, he holds it in his hands. He became this, the size of me, maybe a little bit stronger. Like, do you realize the humility of God to give up all of his freedom and all of his rights so that he could reach weak and lowly you? And what Paul is saying is you now have the opportunity to do a similar kind of thing for the people around you. You can love them, remove the stumbling blocks that you might put before them, and you can give them a smooth path to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when we do that, I think this room gets bigger. I think this room becomes more and more like Jesus. And I think all of us in the room, I think we actually have lives that are more filled with joy. That's what I want to pray that will happen. Jesus, we're people who we're like orphans so much, God, where we, even though we've been given everything, we still feel like we have to cling on to the things that we have in our lives, and we still feel like we have to fight for our freedom and fight for our rights, and we feel like we can't give up any of those, yet we look at you, and God, you had everything, and God, you walked away from it to become humble, to become a servant. God, you tell us in Philippians that you became so humble even to the point of death. God, not just to be a human being, which how low is that compared to the creator who spoke everything into existence, but not just a human, but you became the lowest of low. You became a servant of all. You humbled yourself to the point of death, even death on a cross. And God, we just ask that you would help us to be people that as you loved us, we would love others. And as you gave up your freedom for us, we would gladly make so many accommodations for the people that are around us because you accommodated us in incredible, unbelievable ways. So Jesus, help us become a family that's like that. Because God, we just hold our hands up and we say, in so many ways we're not, but we want to be. And your spirit's in us and we know you're going to keep doing your work. So Jesus, keep doing it tonight. We worship you, trusting that you're going to do it. In your name, amen.